Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hutton.
Drinking me, knowing you.
Also joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Hello.
Hello. Now, we went out for our big Christmas night out the night last night even, which is why sentences might be hard to form and why other things might not be as smooth as they usually are, but we will battle through. But if we look particularly haggard, then that's exactly why. So, we are gathered here today to talk about the general state of digital
stores.
The death of Steam. Because it is worth bringing up that the Epic Game Store seems to just be continually gathering steam, and you were saying, well, why don't we do like a podcast addressing that and addressing the general sort of state of digital storefronts, and that got me thinking as to the way that like digital sales and physical sales have gone over the years. But to kind of, we'll get there, we'll sort of reverberate around, we'll come back around on different points. But I was going to open by just saying, by asking you guys, like, kind of, when did you first give, do you remember when you first got Steam, and how much do you rely on it, like, on a day-to-day or week-to-week kind of basis?
I first got Steam back in 2010, I want to say. I think it's when my Steam account was created, and I started off with the orange box, quintessential purchase for anybody on Steam. And back then, for me, Steam was such a buggy, broken program because I had a laptop. I was going out and doing like my dance competitions when I would go away, and I'd take my laptop with me, and I remember playing through Half-Life 2 for the first time, sat in a changing room at dance competitions.
Nice.
But the thing is, back then, Steam with like offline mode was so buggy, and it just never seemed to want to work. It's like, you're not connected to the internet, are you? No. Do you want to go in offline mode? Yes. But you're not connected to the internet, are you? It's like, No. And it felt like, it may have just been my machines back in the day, but it felt like Steam was this like pretty clunky program for me earlier on. It's a lot better now, and it is my main distribution platform. As somebody who plays primarily on PC, it is my main platform.
Because I didn't realize it was actually established back in 2003. It's been with us way longer than I thought. But it obviously took a long time for it to get its foothold, and like, it is kind of the go-to distribution platform. But I mean, whenabouts did you, do you remember when you first
actually got Steam? Ridiculously late. I never really played a lot of different games. I played pretty much just played World of Warcraft for 10 years. So I couldn't really put a date on it. Sometime at uni, so without showing my age, I won't comment.
Either way, though, it's like, it's at least the last sort of few years, which is
I'm gonna say maybe I only got it about 5 years ago.
Well, yeah, for the longest time, I still only have a Mac. So like, even though I had a PC when I was at home, I just stayed away from PC gaming or anything other than console gaming for the longest time because I was like, nothing's gonna run. And I can tell you, even after having a Mac, nothing runs.
I mean, but, saying that, the support that Steam has brought to the Mac and to Linux over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years has been exceptional. Because it was only about 2 years ago I built my current PC, and throughout uni I was on a Mac, so I was playing stuff on a Mac as best as I
could. Good lord.
And it was fine. Yeah. It's not amazing, but you know, the support was there, which I was happy about.
I think there's always a good handful of titles that do work. It's just that the overall assumption is that Mac stuff doesn't work very well.
No.
And so it's kind of a bit hit and miss. But so over the years, like, obviously you kind of got a bunch of alternatives. Now, you guys will know more of these than I do because I'm but a console peasant. But there are, I mean, for me, when I was sort of like perusing over a bunch of these, and I kind of recognize some names, but you've obviously got the Google Store, which kind of, you know, like, supports a lot of different apps and stuff. You've got Green Man Gaming, which is focused on indies. You've got GOG, or the good old
GOG,
games.
GOG.
Humble and Battle.net.
Battle.net.
And it's like, there's quite a lot out there.
Yeah, I think Battle.net is probably the big, like, I wouldn't say the second biggest, because obviously it only delivers about what, 8 or 9, 10 games.
It's certainly the most established out of
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, that list. I think when I started playing when I started playing WoW, for the short time I played WoW, I think it was on its own launcher, and then eventually Battle.net was created, and then WoW moved over to that. And that's become like a kind of its own standard, and that's fine, I'd say, because it's obviously Blizzard. Now Activision have moved over to it with Destiny 2 and Black Ops 4. So that's fine, to be honest. Like, it's understandable that things like WoW and stuff aren't on Steam. That was just the case. And then, like, Origin came along, EA's one, which isn't bad, to be honest.
Sims.
Like, for me, the only games I have on it are Battlefield 1, that I've barely played, and I've got FIFA 18 for some reason.
Nice.
Which I've barely played. So Origin isn't a mainstay for me. GOG recently did their own storefront slash launcher on PC as well. So GOG, in case you don't know, is the people who live literally next door to CD Projekt Red.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a bunch of those dudes.
And they do all the, like, not remasters, but, like, releasing old games for modern operating systems. So, like, I have my copy of Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 is on GOG.
Right, right.
Because the copy that I have, my physical one, of course, doesn't work on operating systems because it's from 2001.
So, the thing with that is, because that's the thing, they've all seemed to have their little niches, or at least to some degree. And EA's Origin is obviously very important if you like EA games, because they'll release stuff a few days early or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, it's kind of like Epic Games Store is making a lot of waves, because it's the first time someone's really directly gone after Steam's market and said, like, we have enough heft and we have enough of a user base and a fan base to, like, directly challenge Steam. And I think that, like, I mean, they were at the, like, Epic Games Store was all over the VGAs. They were sponsoring some games and they had announcements there as well to say that some games were exclusively coming to that store. In terms of, like, seeing those announcements, did you guys go, or are you like, I have such a library on Steam and that's my go-to or whatever? Like, do you feel that they actually do have a chance, or is it just a big swell of money at the minute paying for a lot of adverts?
At the end of the day, if it's stuff like exclusives, it doesn't really bother me. I don't, like, a little bit of healthy competition isn't a bad thing for Steam. It'll probably make Steam better. And as a user, I don't mind having a separate launcher. There's no negatives, really.
At the end of the day, I think the big negative that people are drawing from this is the fact that it is another launcher.
That's one of the things people
are getting. I mean, I can understand why it's a bit annoying, but people are like, all you're doing is opening another program.
That is
the case. I mean, like I said, using Steam for you know, 8-9 years now, I know how bad Steam can be sometimes. So like, going over to Battle.net again to play Black Ops 4, it's like, this is such a solid launcher, a solid platform. But then only a few months ago, Discord turned around and said, hey, we're doing a store and a launcher. Because it's like, now you can have all your games in place. And it's like, but you're not really migrating it to one place. You're just adding another one to the mix. Yeah. And that's how it felt when Epic turned around to do it. Of course, Bethesda were like, oh yeah, we're not launching 76 on Steam. That's going to be only on Bethesda's launcher. Which again, it's fine. It's not very good because it doesn't do much. Same with Blizzard's one. It doesn't do a huge amount compared to Steam, but it does what it needs to do. But it's like, you're not really bringing anything new to the table. You're just doing another storefront. In reality, it seems to be there are all of these different stores, mainly for the publishing and development side of things, because obviously one of the big things about Epic's store is you get a bigger cut.
Yes.
The publisher gets a bigger cut, whereas on Steam, I don't know what the numbers are, but Valve gets a cut that isn't, like, ridiculously big, but I think for some developers and publishers, they're thinking, that is too big for you to take.
Yes. So that's the thing. I mean, I guess if you were Bethesda and you've been hosting your games for a while on Steam and you've got this new thing coming out, then they must obviously roll the dice and realize that it benefits them more to host it themselves, because they'll risk the loss in visibility, let's say.
Yeah.
Versus a bigger cut on their side. And yeah, in terms of the statistics, Valve take a 30% cut of anything that's on the Steam store, whereas, Epic Games have a 12% revenue cut, which is obviously way, way better for the developer.
It is a much better margin.
And so immediately, like, even if you have a quick cursory Google, you'll find stories of lots of developers jumping ship and publishing their next games on the Epic Store, because it's just way more profitable. And plus, the Epic Store has a free game every 2 weeks. The first one is out today. It's Subnautica, which is like underwater, No Man's Sky.
It is decent.
I know, that's the thing, and Super Meat Boy is the one that's at the end of the month or then in the next couple of weeks. So it's not like they're skimping out on worthwhile
titles.
They're
really trying to get people over. I mean, obviously, as you said, developers are jumping ship, but there are also developers who are being they're being paid by Epic to be exclusive on the Epic Store. So a game that I've been excited for called Satisfactory, made by Coffee Stain Studios, they recently announced we're going to be on Epic's launcher.
And only on Epic's launcher.
And the backlash was massive. I mean, it's quite a small game in the grand scheme of things. It's not a big AAA thing. It's very, very niche. It's very, very me. But it's like, people were not happy about this. They really weren't happy about this.
It's weird.
If you're like me and you don't play Fortnite, I don't have the Epic Games launch, which means I'm going to have to get this new launcher for one game.
See, it's weird. Are you going to say the same thing as me, where it's like, that doesn't seem like much of a deal?
It's not a big deal to me, personally. I mean, if anything, it actually sounds like it'll really help a lot of small companies as well. We'll get a lot of new, really good indie games.
Absolutely.
I
won't dispute that. I mean, it's kind of, from a console perspective, it's very different in terms of how you have your content with you when you've got all these different launches, because not everything does the same thing. Like, nothing is going to be as in-depth as Steam, and nothing is going to be as bare bones as Bethesda's, I'd say. But it's like, imagine on PlayStation or Xbox, you launch a game off your Xbox or your PlayStation, but you're launching it somehow not through PSN and somehow through a different service. You need a different login for a different friends list.
Ubi Play.
Yeah, it's all things like that. Uplay is another one we completely forgot about. I've got Rainbow Six Siege and I've got it on Steam, but you launch it through Steam, it launches Uplay, then launches the game. And it's like, right, okay. That's kind of unnecessary. It's like jumping into Fallout 76 and it's like, I want to add my friends. Where's the friends list? Oh, the friends list is inside Fallout 76. It's not on the Bethesda launcher. And it's like, right, okay, that is confusing.
Yeah.
Battle.net, whole new group of friends. Origin, whole new group of friends. Uplay, whole new group of friends. Because even though you're launching that through Steam, it still doesn't work through Steam.
Yeah. That's obviously one of the biggest problems on the PC side. Is because we've seen so many companies try to get like, oh, we'll have a community on our platform.
Yeah, whereas before it was a relatively like universal thing through Steam. Mm-hmm. Whereas other things like GOG, I think you can get friends through, but GOG I think is mainly dedicated to like single player experiences and obviously older games. Mm-hmm. It does have multiplayer, of course, anyway, but like it is a very robust launcher, but that fills its own niche. Whereas with things like Battle.net, Bethesda, Origin, Uplay, and Epic, they're all trying to be Steam. And I think that's where it's starting to split people across the board, because they're like, I want this experience to just all be in one place, like console players have. You don't launch Black Ops and need a Black Ops account to play online and stuff like that, whereas other games, even through Steam, do that. You launch Just Cause 4, it's like, have you got a Square Enix account? It's like, no, I don't care.
I don't want one.
Just use my Steam account. Come on.
I think you have to do it with Mass Effect. If you play Mass Effect.
God, yeah, what with the Origin thing?
I think you need an EA account. Anyway, I think you do. But anyway, I really didn't think about it from that angle. So that is really interesting.
I think that's the thing that annoys people. It's like when I first got my PlayStation and I had to make a new PSN account and re-add a bunch of people who have moved to PlayStation. Now, that's not a big deal because you do that once. Whereas with new launches and stuff, we're going to have to do that all again, because like me and my friends, we all want to play Satisfactory. And when it eventually releases, or they eventually let us into the beta, still waiting, Jace, we'll have to all add each other again on that. And again, you know, it's not a massive hassle. It isn't a big deal.
You don't have many friends, so it won't take you long.
I've only got to add like three people, but it's like still the fact that that's the case. Like Satisfactory was on Steam. It was in my Steam wishlist. There it is. It's gone.
Right.
Because they said, we were paid by Epic. We're going to put it on Epic. And we said, it's going to be only there for 12 months. It's only timed. But we still might not bring it to Steam. And it's like, but I can't exactly transfer my game from Epic back onto Steam. I'd have to rebuy it again. And it's annoying.
It's an interesting state of flux. Or like, it feels like we're in a state of flux. Because like I said, you've got all these like developer-publisher combos potentially taking hits on visibility. Their games aren't going to be on these massive storefronts because they obviously want to take a bigger hit. They want to take all the revenue.
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously as they should. But I guess there's an assumptive nightmare scenario where every publisher has its own storefront. Well, and every time you want to play something, you go through their storefront to get it.
And it's that inherent thing of like, oh, I haven't played this in a while. What's my password?
Plus as well, I mean, whenever because obviously we mostly 99% cover console stuff. It tends to be that you get more passionate fan bases, but console coverage seems to track better.
In the Western world, consoles are a bigger deal in like pretty much everywhere else. PC is the bigger portion, the biggest chunk of the pie, essentially.
But that's the thing, like whenever we've approached like covering stuff on PC, it's really hard to narrow that down. So whenever we've done articles and stuff on it, it's always been like the 10 best Steam games or whatever. Like Steam is the go-to or the assumptive
and
like,
it is the biggest at the end of the day.
And so like that's one of the biggest things that Epic's going up against is like being therefore associated with PC overall, because like, you know, even the ones that we've reeled off, like people know the name of like GOG or they know the Humble Bundles and stuff like that, but like if you're I don't know that in terms of like nomenclature, it's like Steam is the one that gets thrown up alongside PC.
Yeah.
Like Sony, I mean, as much as Ubisoft have tried to get Uplay to be like the go-to thing.
I mean, Uplay really in the beginning was absolutely dreadful.
I still think it is.
It's not terrible now. It's a lot better than it used to be. But mm-hmm. yeah, when I first ever encountered Uplay for something, it was like, God, this is dreadful.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It wasn't even like animated.
It wasn't a nice program. And I mean, this intrigues me as to whether this is going to make Steam and Valve go and think, we need to change up how we're doing things mm-hmm. here. Because I mean, you know, the cuts back when they started Steam, as you said, 2003 with the launch of Counter-Strike Source, they could charge whatever the hell they liked. Mm-hmm. They could take whatever cut they liked. Mm-hmm. I mean, admittedly, at first it was just their games, but that was the first time the idea of having online games to be updated, like from afar, was a thing. So they could, when other people eventually got their games on Steam, they could do what they want. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is the time that Valve do need to look at it and think, okay, I mean, yeah, Epic Games are not going to topple Steam. I sincerely doubt that will happen.
Maybe. Never say never.
Never say never, no, at all. But I think with the weight that Steam's had behind it over the last, 15 years, it's going to be kind of hard to take that on in the grand
scheme
of things. It's
true. I tell you what's really interesting is it was the same thing that we saw on the Switch when like the eShop first launched, and it was like all these developers rushed to put their stuff on there. But that took like a good few months. And for those first few months, the titles that were on there, obviously the visibility was a lot higher. And for the first few months, the eShop was really easy to use. Mm. And you got recommended good stuff, and all the best stuff was right at the top because that's nigh on all there was. And so one of the biggest problems with Steam these days is curation, because they don't have a good way of elevating good games. And it does come down to that idea of unlimited shelf space. It's like, well, you know, it's potentially unfair for them to like flag certain stuff over other stuff. And they do want to just give you, here's the world's games, you figure it out.
And it does mean you come across some real tat on Steam.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you look at the Switch store now and it's the shovelware store.
It's awful.
Like, it's just a bunch of mobile ports. And some of them, I mean, there's a Santa tracker on there for like £3.
Oh,
and I'm pounds or whatever.
And it's literally like, that's a free app you download to your iPad in 2008.
Exactly.
Not and it's like on your Switch in 2018.
Just a bunch of stuff that obviously, you know, like their doors are open, the floodgates are open, and everything is going on to there. So in terms of Epic's thing, if it does continue the steam that they're, I keep saying they're building Steam, but which is kind of ironic because they're kind of building Steam to take on Steam.
But, see what you did there.
I know. And so the bigger that they get though, that means they have that same problem because they have all these different like deals in place. Oh, we'll give you like better revenue, we'll give you a better cut.
Yeah.
But the more that happens, how the hell do they stay on top of the curation side of it?
You see, other platforms have managed that because of course, you know, PlayStation and Xbox stores are notoriously good for their curation. Yeah, you can still get some duff titles on PS4.
They're usually buried.
Yeah, but like they don't show up very often.
No.
And if they are though, like most of the time you don't even know. Whereas on Steam and on Switch you get some real tat.
Yeah.
And it's like, I looked at, I think it's today, the Switch Christmas like holiday sale has launched.
Ooh.
I had a look on the offers and it's all crap. It's all crap. You think, oh, I might get a deal on Smash Brothers or Splatoon. No, it's all utter garbage.
Do you want a Santa tracker?
Yeah, it's all stuff like that. And other platforms have managed to do that. I mean, things like Origin, Blizzard, and Bethesda, like their stuff isn't really curated because it is just their stuff. Whereas things like GOG, that is curated because everything is essentially worked on and released in-house to get rid of all the DRM, to get it all working and stuff. That is essentially curated. And if Epic can pull that off, then, you know, they have got a potential upper hand on Steam because... Yeah. Of the curation.
I mean, have you guys, you've been on the Epic Games, the page, and you've like flicked through and stuff. It's way more like visually heavy. Like it's like a nice new modern web page.
That's
the client is too.
Steam doesn't look nice.
That's the other thing too.
Steam
has aged. The frequency that Valve update Steam's UI is painfully bad. like going back, because admittedly there was a period of time where I just had Steam and I didn't have to have anything else. And now obviously I've had to get Battle.net and Origin and everything else. Battle.net especially is gorgeous.
Right.
It's so simple and to the point. It does what it's told. Whereas Steam is just a browser. It is literally just a browser in a different skin.
And it feels like it too. Like, and the transitions between menus.
Sluggish. It's horrible. Like, yeah, I think Valve really need to do a big like kick up the butt for Steam.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, do you think if they overhauled it and just kind of sorted out the aesthetic of it, that would be enough to at least approach contending with something that looks more like inviting?
I think that would help.
I wouldn't mind it if they turned around and made it as slick and as clean as other launchers.
Mm-hmm. The same time as though, like, we it's just something we sort of put up with. Whereas, like, that is not what's gonna in the end. To keep it in the lead of something if something starts to catch up on it. If you understand me,
yeah.
Like, it's a minor sort of inconvenience about Steam that it doesn't look nice, it's but like it is
if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, even though there are things that are kind of broken about Steam, but it's like using something like, say, Audacity. It looks like it's from 1986, but it does the job
that
perfectly.
That puts me off using that. You know?
Oh, really?
I mean, Audition. We're going into software territory right now, but like
nerds.
The aesthetic of something doesn't necessarily have to play up, but it does make the whole experience better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
And then for the very brief time I used the Epic launch when Fortnite first came out, because I was like, oh, I like PUBG, let's give this a go. I thought, it's a nice little launcher, but I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one.
It's a question of like necessity, I think. And it's just like, it's interesting because, like, you know, like, competition breeds innovation. And it's like, it's not like Steam have had anything as big as this before. It's probably just the way that Epic Games is being framed at the minute. It sounds like this big contender that has all this, you know, momentum behind it.
They are capitalizing on a huge number of people playing Fortnite through their launcher.
There is that.
PC. So they're just going, hey, look, here's a bunch of other games. Mm-hmm. You're already opening us every day. Mm-hmm. Here's some more stuff. You know.
I realized we forgot to mention the Twitch.
All the integration stuff.
Game app as well, because they have their own game app, right?
Yeah, and plus, that's another part of the Epic Games thing too, because they do kickbacks to people if you get referred to the game store. So like
kind of like Amazon affiliate links.
Yes, and so like they kind of have all this like interconnected social media push, which like Steam like has links to people like company pages and stuff, but it doesn't
On Steam, but they don't get kickback from suggesting things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they've already incorporated that into Fortnite anyway. Haven't they? If you buy V-Bucks, you can it'll kick back to your favorite content creators and stuff like that.
So yes.
That implementation is already there.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. You go on any sort of games like page on the Epic Store, and you already have all these big social media links, and it's like, here's how you keep in touch with the developers, and like, you know, like if it's something that's in early access, like you can still do that on Steam. You get the mailing list and everything.
Yeah.
But like, it seems like they're going forward with like the personalization of it and that personal connection. Like, the reason you're going to get invested in a project is because you can keep up with it the whole way through. And then obviously, if you have a favorite YouTuber or Twitch streamer or whatever, and that they're a fan of the game too, then it kind of benefits everybody. And so establishing that ecosystem is something that like Steam has, but isn't really at the forefront of the experience.
It needs to be refined. I think that's the thing about Steam. There's just so much baggage on it. There's so much to it because of 15 years of not necessarily always curated things. And just 15 years of games. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of millions of games on that platform.
I tell you as well, there is a weird potential ethical quandary with the idea of, like, obviously review journalists or streamers and stuff, like, sponsoring games that they then get kickbacks for. Obviously, that's a whole thing. And so it'll depend how that, like, shakes out. But another thing that's worth talking about, and kind of in regards to that too, is that reviews are optional on the Epic Games Store. That people, the developer or publisher, can choose to turn them off, which is that's a thing. And so, like obviously, like Epic, are just sort of, I mean, that's just, you know, Steam review bombing is a thing, and it happens.
It does happen,
very frequently.
And it's not. I know that developers and companies, publishers, hate it when that happens. Yes. But
look what happened to GTA 5.
GTA 5 had it. DayZ, I think, had it as well. Like, I mean, to be honest, it's not a practice unless it's for something like without any weight to it. Then it's not okay. But there are times when that happens and it does make things different. Like when Rockstar banned mods, was it, on GTA 5 or GTA Online?
That was it,
and then and people flocked to the Steam store and plummeted the reviews. I think that kind of works to give people a little bit of leverage back against the developers.
Yeah.
Being able to switch that off, it's like disabling likes and dislikes and comments on a YouTube video. I'm surprised that YouTube haven't turned around on YouTube Rewind 2018 and gone, oh yeah, you can't dislike this anymore. That's kind of how it feels like if Epic are going to let you turn that off.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing as well. So what's their refund policy like? Because if there's no reviews on a game and you buy it and it's PAP, surely there's a refund policy.
Well, I think, I mean, obviously they're letting, like, you know, you can have them on or off, but I think it'll become a market, it'll become a thing if a developer's turn their reviews off.
It's like, I think that'll instantly make people think,
they're probably
not worth our time if that's the case. But as you're saying about refund, Epic turned around straight away and said, yes, there was a refund policy. Mm-hmm. Because obviously Steam introduced theirs, a year and a half, 2 years ago, maybe?
It was, I mean, considering how long the service has been.
Obviously, with the whole hubbub about Fallout 76 and people not being allowed digital refunds, which was very stupid on Bethesda's part. But the thing about Epic's one, because they're saying, oh, no questions asked. And yet they ask you genuinely for, like, one of your fingers. They ask you to give you your debit cards. And they ask you this multitude of questions as to genuinely, like, such specific things. Like, what was the day you bought the game? What are the last digits of the card that you used? What day did you purchase it on? How
what's
much
your mother's maiden name?
What's your mother's name? What's your PIN number? What's your social
what's your
security
favorite
number?
Food?
It's a lot of things. And it seems like a lot of hoops to jump through. Now, admittedly, compared to Steam, you do get a bigger window to refund the game. It seems on Epic, but you have to jump through all those hoops. Mm-hmm. On Steam, you can buy a game and go, yeah, don't like this, press a button, Steam will go, okay, thinking about it, there you go.
And
it is a lot simpler. Admittedly, yes, it is you get lesser time to get your head around or experience a
Sometimes
game.
Sometimes you don't need that much time, though, like, really.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I bought a game before, opened it, looked at the UI and thought, because it was like a transport game, like you build, like, roads and trains, again, very me. And I'm like, yeah, this looks really interesting. And then I opened it, I was like, wow, this looks like crap.
Right.
And I
you
refunded
just immediately
it.
Know,
and
yeah.
then Bob's Your Own Clip was gone. And there was a big, you know, controversy about, even with that very small window, people abusing it. Somebody, I remember Polygon did this horrible, horrible hit piece on a streamer who bought
shots fired from Rich Hudson.
It was honestly a very bad way to go about things. Mm-hmm. Somebody a streamer bought Sonic Forces, which we all know is not good.
I enjoyed that game for 10 minutes or so. The character creator.
I mean, yeah, that was good fun. Bought it, played it on stream. Didn't like the game at all. Like, I mean, admittedly, I can understand why, because I've played it myself
it's
not good. Uh-huh. And he refunded it and got the money back. And then somebody at Polygon was like, that's not okay. And it's like, but it was everything was still under Steam's, like, he hadn't played it for the X amount of time. It's like 2 hours, I think. He completed it really quickly, because, I mean, the game is very
short. It's really short, yeah.
He finished it in time. All of the tick boxes were ticked. And they did this hit piece on him as to like try and get loads of negative press on him. And everyone was kind of like, but that's still under their
policy. If it's within
the
terms, it's fine.
But with Epic, if their policy is going to be a bit wider, it's going to be a bit more welcoming, that could potentially be abused even more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's interesting. Like, that thing that you said before about, like, you know, like, it allows, like, customers to, like, get some feedback. Like, if everyone goes and does, like, a big Steam bomb kind of thing, then yes, it forces people to, or forces the companies to take notice. But I wonder if the only reason that review bombing has become a thing is because that's the only way they can get a message across in, like, a big enough way. Whereas the way that the Epic Game Store is, like, you have all these, like, social media connections and, like, all the different, you can leap straight onto a company's Instagram or their Twitter feed or whatever. It's all right there immediately. And so, like, you can, you know, if someone needs to flag the idea that a game is unfinished or there's some problem with it or whatever.
I mean, Steam has forums as well built in, which are very, very useful at times. Like with Just Cause 4, I've been having issues with it running on PC due to GPU errors, and I can jump straight onto the forums on Steam and they're like, oh yeah, it's a fix that we're still waiting on from Avalanche and all this sort of thing. So I do get to see that straight there. But yeah, having those direct links, I don't really know how frequently the in-Steam forums are used by developers. Like I look at, for example, Planet Coaster, which is constantly being updated. Their Twitter, their Reddit, their own forums are always really lively. As for Steam, I don't see the community people from Frontier working on that side of things.
Right, yeah.
So it does feel a bit more direct, but then it's kind of lacking that like in community discussion area that you get with Steam.
Yeah, I think overall, like Steam kind of feels a little bit faceless. It kind of has to be considering how much content they're shifting through it.
Yeah.
But it just as a platform, it feels like, I mean, you know, it is like the web browser experience. It's there. It does a certain thing.
It does the job.
Yeah, it does the job.
It does the job.
Yeah. It does it well.
That's obviously let them, you know, like be at the top of the pile for so long. But for where we are at the minute, I'm quite excited to see what Epic continue to do, because at the minute they've got a lot of stuff that benefits the customer. You get free games every couple of weeks, and they have a lot of really good stuff in terms of their revenue split, and a lot of great ways of connecting different devs to different projects and different people. And I also think that the revenue thing means that way more games will get made, or at least people will take risks on new mechanics and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm kind of looking forward to see what happens from here. So yes, you guys can let us know what you think down in the comments below, or find us on social media. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rich.
Thank you for having me.
And joined by Rach.
I'm so hungover.
Me too. But it's cool. We'll catch you next time.
Bye. Cheers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.